Join the eMarketer on November 3rd, that's tomorrow, for our next virtual event, Attention, Trends and Predictions for 2024. Our leading analysts and executives from brands like Pepsi, Colgate, Palmolive, and Kendra Scott will explore trends like generative AI, retail media, and more to help professionals to plan for the year ahead. You can visit insiderintelligence.com/events/summit to register today.
Even though I think the number of people that are dissatisfied with Google's core products grows every year, you know, albeit from a low base, it's a thing that people fundamentally trust. And so I think that that's something that's going to be, you know, very difficult to sort of untangle or unwind.
Hey gang, it's Thursday, November 2nd. Max and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by one of our senior analysts covering everything digital advertising and media based in Philadelphia is Max Willens.
Yo.
Hey fella. Today's... Oh, no facts. Today it's the surprise question giveaway. So today's surprise question giveaway, we have free stuff to give you. It's a water bottle. And if you answer this question and send us a screenshot of your review of this podcast, then you get to win it. So the question is, best-selling music artists of all time, Beatles, number one, Garth Brooks in second, shout out, Elvis is third. The question is, what was the official debut single of the Beatles? What was the official debut single of the Beatles? Max, do you know?
I do, but I'm not going to spoil it for the listeners.
You can say it and then B can bleep you out.
Oh, I was bluffing. I actually don't know. Oh,
okay.
I have a guess.
Unbelievable. But... Sham. Have a guess.
Is it not She Loves You?
No. Huh? No, it's not. So that's one song you guys can scratch from your list if you're thinking of that. It's
free
not that
for
one.
Everybody.
But you were saying, what's today? You said something else Beatles related.
So November 2nd happens to be the day that the term Beatlemania was coined.
Hmm.
It came up in a review of a performance that they gave while they were still in England. I feel like a lot of people think of it, and by a lot of people, I mean ugly Americans like me, think of it as being like a term related to their arrival in the US, but Beatlemania was well underway before they came to America.
I was looking for this surprise question giveaway question for like hours, and then Max put his hand up and was like, oh, today happens to be. So where was that earlier? Could have saved myself a lot of time. But yeah, it's coincidence that that is today, and the question is Beatles related, because I had no idea until Max told me seconds before the show started. But that's the question. So if you know the answer to what was the official debut single of the Beatles, send your correct answer, plus a screenshot of your review of this podcast into podcast@emarketer.com, or you can DM us at insiderintelligence, one word, on Instagram. Today's real topic, Google quietly easing itself into fourth gear. In today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover some Google stories. Then for another news, we'll discuss why Maps is becoming more like search and the most interesting trend in affiliate marketing. But we start with Google. Max, let's start by taking a peek at what's going on in the case with the DOJ. So let's check in on that. DOJ versus Google. It's the antitrust trial that's going on right now. We've known for a while that Google was paying Apple to be the default search engine on Apple phones, tablets, and computers, which is kind of a centerpiece of this trial. But the New York Times recently reported that the exact figure in 2021, at least, was $18 billion, $18 billion. The deal gives Google prime placement on Apple devices, but has also deterred Apple from investing in its own search capabilities, according to testimony from a former Google executive who now runs machine learning and AI at Apple. Max, what's your take now that we have an actual figure?
Well, I think that the guys at Bernstein deserve a lot of credit for, you know, putting figures out about this years ago. And I think that they're pretty close to being right. I mean, I think what's so interesting about this is there's been all this talk about how, you know, this business deal kind of deterred Apple from getting into the search business and, you know, quashed a lot of competition. But I think what's really notable is that we have reached a point now where Google has just sort of a really kind of an unshakable hold on this core kind of consumer search functionality. I think a really important point of comparison here would be just looking at Europe. So like after the European Commission, I think, fined Google about 5 billion euros Google, basically in an attempt to mollify them after paying that fine, they changed things around inside their Android phones and gave customers an option when they booted them up for the first time, you know, which search engine do you want? You know, you can use Google, which we have here, but you can also use DuckDuckGo or Yandex or Bing or whatever it happens to be. Google would regularly kind of swap in alternatives. And this offering really didn't make much of a difference to their market share in Europe. They still have over 90% market share in Europe. It's, you know, down from 97%, but it's still a stranglehold effectively. And so while, you know, we know this number and it speaks to, you know, how valuable Google seems to view this placement and this partnership, I do think we've kind of like broken past any point of consumers meaningfully changing what they decide to use when it comes to this kind of basic consumer search. As I'm sure we'll get into later, like there's lots of different kinds of searches that people do now. And so that's why you see things like Amazon and Walmart search revenues skyrocketing. But The reality is that Googling is still a verb and it's going to stay that way for the foreseeable future, I think.
Right. It's just become so entrenched now. I mean, Had they done that 10, 15, however many years ago, maybe people would have said, yeah, I'll give this other one a try. But the behavior is so entrenched, it almost seems like it's not even that fair to say, oh, well, we'll give people the chance now or the choice now because they're going to default to Google, a lot of people, because they've been using it for so long. It's what they know. Part of the case here is the DOJ saying, okay, well, if it's so easy for people to switch, which Google argues, why are you paying $18 billion a year in hopes that they won't? Which is kind of a centerpiece of their argument. Microsoft, they said in testimony that they've tried nearly every year to persuade Apple to switch to its search default to Bing, failed. DuckDuckGo saying it's nearly impossible for consumers to discover rival search engines because of Google's default agreements. Yeah, the folks calling this somewhat of a peace treaty between Google and Apple. You make us the default and we won't, you know, take away any of our apps because it has a bunch of other apps which are really important, especially for people who have iPhones, Gmail, Maps, YouTube, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's just kind of gotten to the point where Google has effectively, you know, created the ecosystem that they've spent, you know, years building has, You know, survived and thrived to the point now where people feel some hesitation to leave it. You know, Inside of this ecosystem, this platform that they've built, there's, you know, you have video, you have search, you have local business results, you have reviews, you have shopping. And, you know, even though I think the number of people that are dissatisfied with Google's core products grows every year, you know, albeit from a low base, it's a thing that people fundamentally trust. And so I think that that's something that's going to be, you know, very difficult to sort of untangle or unwind if the goal here is really to sort of bring some level of, you know, parity to the search market.
Mm-hmm. So Google recently reported Q3 earnings. They said they made $60 billion from ads, That's up nearly 10% year on year. Its search business grew 11%. That accounts for 75% of that overall ads business. Max, what was your biggest takeaway from Google's Q3 performance?
Well, to me, it just signals how it touches on what we've been talking about already, which is just how kind of dominant and all powerful their search ads business is. I mean, it's just, I think it's kind of hilarious that, you know, they beat the Wall Street estimates for revenue. They, you know, had a bounce back year, albeit on weak comps, and investors dinged their stock because their cloud business failed to, you know, hit. They missed their estimates by 2.6%, which I think is just kind of hilarious, especially because cloud is such a lumpy business relative to search advertising. And so, you know, it's not surprising really at all that they couldn't. I mean, it's surprising a little bit, but it's not a shock that they ever so slightly missed this target that they've set out. Mm-hmm. And I think, too, the bounce back in their search business amid all the competition they're facing, you know, from things like Amazon or Walmart or, you know, other search providers, Bing even, it speaks a little bit to, it's kind of like a corollary to something that, you know, is sort of an axiom about advertising and marketing, which is just that, like, in times of turbulence, advertisers go to what works. And I guess you could say, to a certain extent, the results that, you know, Google laid out show that consumers do the same thing. They're not going to abandon the searches that they perform on YouTube or on Google.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two things jumped out to me. One, growth accelerating. 10% Google ad growth is the fastest it's grown in the last five quarters. And it's gotten faster and faster each of the last four. So it's continued to get faster and faster. And then the second thing was net income nearly set a record, nearly reached $20 billion, grew over 40% year on year. You mentioned those weak comps, but still $20 billion is, yeah, just shy of the actual record. Max, today Google, you mentioned some of its competitors there. Today Google has a leading 27% share of the US digital ad pie. That's 14 points more. It's good enough for first, and 14 points more than Amazon, currently in third. In 2 years' time, though, that gap will go from 14-point share gap between Google and Amazon to 10. So from 14 to 10, Google is going to lose 2 points. Amazon's going to gain two. How concerned should Google be about Amazon's growing share of the digital ad pie in the US?
Well, probably quite concerned, but I also feel like there's not a whole lot they can do about it. You know, one of the main drivers of Amazon's, well, there are two things that are really fueling Amazon's advertising growth. One is just on-site ads, just, you know, people more and more are just turning to Amazon if they know, oh, I need to buy kitchen towels, or I have to buy, you know, just some kind of like mundane, banal good that they know that they can get shipped free to their house. And so they just go to Amazon, and that gives them an opportunity to serve up a fresh batch of ads to people. And the other piece of it is just Amazon's expanding offsite ambitions, you know, them turning ads on in Prime Video, for example, and the deals that they're forging with other folks to sort of allow their user data to be the sort of, you know, spine for advertising across a whole bunch of different surfaces. And there's really nothing that Google can do about that. I mean, one of the things that's kind of powered Google's business above and beyond the primacy of their search engine is their user data. And Amazon's user data is, you know, it's distinct from Google's, but it's in some ways kind of unparalleled because there's the variety of things that you can buy on there and consume, you know, through their products is kind of unparalleled. And so
yeah,
there's not much that Google can do about this, really.
Yeah, it's definitely something to watch because Amazon, it's been overtaking folks quietly, you can argue, for a while now. Amazon shot past Instagram in terms of share of the US ad pie back in 2020. This year, Amazon overtook standalone Facebook in terms of share of the US digital ad pie. Now, they're obviously combined into Meta, and Meta is still bigger than Amazon for now. But yeah, Amazon is really growing in terms of share, and in a couple of years, getting real close to Meta. And then you can obviously see if you just extrapolate that out on a similar path, it's starting to head closer to Google. Let's talk about another part of Google's business, YouTube. That saw double-digit growth for the first time in 6 quarters, growing nearly 13%. What stands out to you about how YouTube is getting on?
So I think that it's important to sort of, you know, view the bounce back that they had with a pinch of salt in that, you know, they are, as you point out, they've had kind of a rough go of things recently. So they're bouncing back against a kind of weakish comp. But I think the thing that really leapt out to me was in the 10Q that they put out, Google acknowledged that the bounce back was driven more by brand advertising than by direct response advertising. And I think that that can really be tied to just how much a part of people's big screen TV time YouTube has turned into. There's over 150 million households where people are watching YouTube on a, you know, big television every month. And that's just outstanding scale. And it also is really going to afford them a huge opportunity to sort of continue to court brand advertisers, even though, you know, a lot of their business is driven by direct response. Like, being able to attract brand dollars is huge for them.
Yep.
I also was struck by the absence of a new Shorts user growth number. They've been very keen to sort of talk about how many billions of people watch Shorts all the time, and they didn't offer a new number in this most recent quarter. They did offer a, you know, increased number of Shorts consumed, but that to me is not as notable because that's a knob that they can fiddle with a lot more easily than a, you know, user number.
Yeah. Yeah, 70 billion daily views, up from 50 billion at the start of the year. But to Max's point, yeah, it's not people, individual people. Final thing here, Max, staying on YouTube, they're making it easier to buy creators' products, according to our senior retail analyst, Zach Stambor. Zach recently wrote about two new features that aim to make it easier for creators to market products through videos on its platforms, as per TechCrunch. One, YouTube's rolling out a feature that lets creators make a shopping button appear at relevant points in their videos. Think about demonstrating a beauty product. YouTube's test in the US apparently drove folks who saw the timestamps to click on tagged products about twice as often. And the second thing here is YouTube is allowing creators to tag affiliate products in bulk across their video libraries based on products added to the video's description. How much do you think these move the social commerce needle for them?
I would say it's kind of tough to say. I mean, YouTube has sort of taken stabs at things like this in the past, you know, and partnering with companies like Spring. But I think part of the reason that they haven't really taken root in the past is that there wasn't necessarily a scaled population of creators looking to make money in this way. And now that's becoming increasingly more common, especially as you go further out on the long tail into the sort of micro and nano influencer part of the ecosystem. And so, you know, as more and more of those people start looking for ways to sort of, you know, monetize their followings more effectively, I think you can start to see this work out. But it's not a given to me that this is going to sort of, you know, turbocharge their position in that market.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's it for the lead. We skip the halftime report. We'll go straight to the second half of the show today. In other news, Google Maps is becoming more like search, and how affiliate marketing is stretching the funnel to find growth. Story one, Google Maps is becoming more like search. Thanks to AI, thinks Andrew J. Hawkins of The Verge. He notes that Google is adding new AI-powered features to maps, like more immersive navigation, better driving directions, and more organized search results, ultimately reminding many users of Google search. And that's the plan. Mr. Hawkins explains that as well as regular maps queries, in coffee shops, Google wants folks to be able to enter vague queries like fall foliage, or things to do in Tokyo and get a ton of useful hits. Max, the most interesting sentence in this article about Google Maps becoming more like search is what and why.
So I'm going to be a little bit cute here and say that the most important sentence is actually a comment on the story.
Okay.
One of the people reading it wrote, "Today, Google Maps suggested I just turn off the interstate to an address that was next to the highway, like just drive right off the bridge." And to me, this is important because I think that a lot of what Google is doing with Maps makes a lot of sense because this is a playbook that worked for search, but it does seem like it's coming at the expense of the core product. It's something that's sort of very difficult to sort of, you know, measure independently, but, you know, this story was replete with comments of people saying the actual Maps part of Google Maps is terrible now. Like, it's crammed with sponsored search results that aren't that relevant. It tells me to do things that are not safe. It's, you know, mapping of the streets that I need to use for navigation has gotten worse. And I think that it's an important thing to, you know, not lose sight of as we watch this company continue to sort of look for pockets of growth, is that, you know, that growth does come at the expense of the user experience. And that's something that's, I guess, worth keeping an eye on.
Mm-hmm. Story two, Max, you wrote that affiliate marketing is stretching the funnel to find growth, noting that top line spending in affiliate marketing looks flattish so far in 2023, but the agencies have convinced clients that affiliate marketing can be used to drive results up and down the funnel, a significant win for a channel typically viewed as performance focused. But Max, what to you was the most interesting finding from your recent report on affiliate and why?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Marcus. There was a lot in this report. It's a very diffuse ecosystem, so I try to sort of tag as much relevant stuff as possible. But I really do think that the most interesting thing is unfortunately something that's kind of lurking on the near-term horizon, which is what Gen AI's role in affiliate is going to be. Obviously, anybody that listens to the show or reads all the stuff that eMarketer and II puts out knows that Gen AI has been a huge topic of conversation around media this entire year. But I think that affiliate in particular is kind of uniquely vulnerable to disruption at the hands of this technology. And to be clear, the people that are in it are definitely kind of, you know, rolling their sleeves up and trying it out. The Performance Marketing Association, which helps cover affiliate, polled its users twice this year. And I think in the most recent poll they'd done, over 90% of respondents said that they were using Gen AI in some way already, which to me is pretty wild. But, you know, there's a version of the future where people really do kind of come to accept the answers from, you know, an Amazon search or a Google search, where you just, you know, open up their search bar and say, I'm going camping for the first time. What's the best array of stuff that I can buy by spending under $500? And just trusting what the answer is and just going, yeah. Oh, and then at the bottom, there's just a button you can click to buy it all from, you know, REI or from Amazon or whatever it happens to be. And that potentially just completely wrecks or blows up that entire industry, or at minimum just completely transforms how it's viewed and used by marketers. And so I think that just I'm going to be watching Gen AI from lots of angles in the year to come, but I think I'm going to be watching that especially closely because the implications are pretty profound.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point. That's what we've got time for this episode. Max, thank you so much for hanging out today.
Always a pleasure, Mark.
Yes, sir. Pleasure's all mine. Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, Stuart, who runs the team, Sophie, who runs our social media, and thanks to everyone for listening in. As we mentioned at the top, surprise question giveaway. If you know the official debut single of The Beatles, then send us that answer in to podcast@emarketer.com or DM us at Insider Intelligence, one word on Instagram. If you know that answer, send it in with a copy or a screenshot of your review of this podcast, and you could win a free Behind the Numbers branded water bottle. We hope to see you tomorrow, though, for the Behind the Numbers weekly listen and eMarketer podcast. That's how the music goes.
The theme song needs work.
I feel like I nailed it, but okay.